Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to take a look at something most of us just see as an expense, a necessary evil, maybe.
Insurance.
Insurance, that thing you pay for and really, really hope you never have to use.
Exactly. But the sources we're digging into today, they frame it completely differently. They see it as this, well, this massive, almost invisible engine for the global economy.
And we're going to start not with a balance sheet, but with a story, a really visceral one. Think about Maria Rodriguez in Louisiana right after Hurricane Katrina just flattened her community. Her family's restaurant was gone.
And this was everywhere, of course. But here's what made her different. Unlike so many of her neighbors who were uninsured and just had to leave,
They had no choice.
no choice.
Yeah.
But Maria had comprehensive coverage. She got a claim payment and she got it fast. And that meant she could start rebuilding, almost immediately.
That one thing. That financial backstop. That was the entire difference. She rebuilt, she hired her staff back, and her restaurant became this anchor for the whole street's recovery.
She even told a reporter, insurance was the difference between starting over and never recovering at all.
And that really gets to the heart of our mission for this deep dive.
It does. We're looking at sources that treat insurance as this fundamental economic institution. It's what provides stability, sure, but more importantly, it's what enables risk-taking.
The kind of risk that drives real growth. So we're going to show you how insurance is woven into the fabric of developed economies, and then we'll look at developing nations, where the lack of it is a huge barrier to progress.
Right, you're going to get a whole new perspective on how financial resilience really works.
Okay, so let's unpack this first part. What makes formal insurance so much more efficient than, just saving up for a rainy day yourself?
Well, that whole strategy of self-insurance, it's actually a massive brake on economic progress when you scale it up.
A break? How so?
Because it forces capital to just sit there doing nothing. Take the example of James Chen, a rice farmer in rural Vietnam. Every season, to protect his family against a flood or a drought, he had to set aside this precious capital.
Money that he could have been using.
Exactly. Money for better seeds, a new water pump, maybe more land. But instead, it was just locked in a jar. It was smart for his family, but from an economic perspective, it's totally unproductive.
So you're saying the problem is that the risk is all concentrated on one person and that freezes up capital that could be used for investment. You're losing all that opportunity cost.
Precisely. That's the inefficiency. And formal insurance solves this through really the magic of risk pooling.
Right.
Instead of one person saving a lot, you have 1,000 people, 10,000 people, all paying a small premium. That pool can fully protect any one individual who suffers a disaster, while the vast majority of that capital stays in motion, invested productively in the economy.
So you're basically buying the right to use your own money now instead of hoarding it for a disaster that might not even happen to you.
You're purchasing the transformation of uncertainty into certainty. And what makes this so efficient is the math. It's actuarial science. Insurers aren't just guessing. They quantify these risks with incredible precision. They analyze huge sets of data to figure out the exact probability of a loss. And that lets them price the risk way more efficiently than any one person could with just their intuition.
So it's not just a big pot of money. It's a data engine designed to make sure that pot of money is as small as it can possibly be while still doing its job.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Okay, so that efficiency. Let's talk about where it really starts building momentum. Insurance dollars don't just replace what's lost, they actually create this powerful economic multiplier effect.
This is one of the most fascinating insights from the sources. There's this incredible data from the 2018 Paradise, California wildfires. The total claims paid out were huge, something like $12 billion.
12 billion, that's a massive injection of cash.
It is, but here's the kicker. Researchers tracked that money, and they found that for every single insurance dollar paid out for a destroyed home, it generated about $1.87 in total economic activity.
Wow. So a $100,000 claim becomes almost $190,000 for the local economy. How does that work?
Speed and targeting. When that check from the insurer arrives in just a few weeks, that money goes straight to local contractors,
who then buy materials from local suppliers.
And pay wages to local workers, who then go spend that money in local shops. It keeps the whole economic engine from seizing up. The alternative is waiting months, maybe years, for government aid. And by then, the local economy is already withered.
And there are direct job numbers for this, right?
There are. For every $10 million in reconstruction that was funded by those insurance payouts, about 125 direct construction jobs were created. the insurance claim literally becomes a job creation program the moment it's cashed.
That stability must also allow for more dynamism, even beyond disaster recovery. I'm thinking of that quote from Sarah Kim, the tech founder in Silicon Valley.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah.
She said, insurance isn't an expense. It's the foundation that lets us take calculated risks everywhere else.
That's it.
And that's the hidden value. It's what economists call productive uncertainty. If you know your downside is covered by a policy, you're much more willing to invest in those ambitious, high-reward projects. It's why we can build skyscrapers or offer innovative medical treatments.
And this extends to people, too, not just buildings.
Yeah.
Human capital.
Absolutely. The biggest economic asset most of us have is our ability to earn a living in the future. Health and life insurance are fundamentally about protecting that asset.
Right.
And that security allows for long-term planning. If you know your family is protected, if the worst happens, you're more likely to make those long-term investments, like saving for your kids' education or starting a new business.
Without it, you're forced to be cautious. And that caution, scaled across a whole society, means less investment, less risk-taking, and ultimately a lower ceiling on what's possible. It puts a limit on aspiration.
Which brings us to how this all fuels big-picture financing.
Yeah.
If insurance makes risk manageable for a company, it also makes huge long-term projects possible for the whole economy.
Yeah, the industry itself becomes this foundational investor just because of the sheer amount of money it's holding.
The scale is just, it's mind-boggling. Globally, life insurance companies manage over $30 trillion in assets.
$30 trillion!
And they aren't just hoarding that cash. They're required to invest it. And the key is that they can invest it in a very specific way.
What makes their capital so different?
Victoria Chen, a CIO at a major insurer, calls it patient capital. Because life insurance policies are long-term things, often spanning decades, the insurers can fund projects with very, very distant horizons.
Things that a normal investor who wants a return next quarter would never touch.
Exactly. We're talking about massive infrastructure projects, renewable energy, transportation networks, things that are the literal foundation of a modern economy. That's where a lot of that funding comes from.
And this patient capital is also what enables innovation, especially in really high-risk fields.
Oh, absolutely. Look at Sarah Blackburn's medical tech startup. She developed this breakthrough diagnostic tool. But to even run clinical trials, she needed highly specialized liability insurance.
And without that, the investors wouldn't come near it.
They wouldn't touch it.
Mm.
The potential legal risk was just a giant, unquantifiable question mark. The insurance policy took that uncertainty and turned it into a fixed, manageable cost. It's what made the innovation possible in the first place.
Wow.
And you can see it in the data. The sources show that regions with these well-developed specialty insurance markets, the ones that can handle complex risks, they generate something like 32 to 45% more venture capital activity.
It's part of the ecosystem. You can't have one without the other.
And you can't have operational continuity either, which is where business interruption coverage, or BI, comes in.
Right. This is about what happens during the rebuilding.
Yes. Think about Marcus Wilson's furniture workshop. The fire insurance pays to rebuild the structure, sure. But the BI coverage is what preserves his cash flow. It pays his skilled employees so they don't leave. It maintains his relationships with suppliers. It protects the business itself, not just the building.
And on a bigger scale, that can prevent an entire industry from grinding to a halt.
The 2019 Michigan Auto Parts Factory fire is a terrifyingly good example. This one factory was a key supplier in a just-in-time manufacturing system. If it went down for long, the ripple effect would have been catastrophic.
It would have shut down assembly lines all over the Midwest.
For months. But because they had robust BI coverage, they didn't just wait to rebuild. They immediately started air freighting parts from overseas to keep the supply chain stable. Analysts figure that one policy prevented about $4.2 billion in cascading economic losses.
So the premium they paid wasn't just for them. It was, in a way, an insurance policy for the entire regional auto industry.
That's exactly what it was, an economic shock absorber.
So let's shift our focus now to the developing world, where this whole economic engine is often missing. This is where we see the protection gap become a genuine crisis.
It's a very stark reality. The story of Raj Patel, a shop owner in Mumbai, really illustrates it. He lost almost half his inventory in a monsoon flood.
And he had no coverage.
None. He said, insurance feels like a luxury when every rupee counts for daily survival. That captures the dilemma perfectly.
And this is the protection gap we hear about.
It is. In developed economies, insurance premiums make up, say, 8 to 12% of GDP. In developing nations, it's just 1 to 3%. And get this, An incredible 93% of all economic losses in developing countries are uninsured.
93%. So there's just no backstop.
No backstop. People rely on family, charity, or just selling off whatever they have. And the barriers are huge. It's affordability. You know, a premium could be 20% of a worker's income. It's accessibility. Most insurance offices are only in the big cities. And it's a massive trust deficit.
So you can't just drop a Western insurance model in there and expect it to work.
Not at all. You need innovation.
Yeah.
And that's where something called microinsurance comes in. These are products designed specifically for low-income populations. They keep premiums low by focusing only on very specific catastrophic risks, like a drought.
Can you give us an example of how that changes behavior?
Sure. Think of Maria Gonzalez, a coffee farmer in Guatemala. She pays the equivalent of just 2 days' wages for drought protection. It's a tiny amount. But that one policy removes the fear of total ruin, so she feels safe enough to invest in better, more expensive fertilizer.
And her yield goes up.
Her yield goes up. And technology is helping this scale massively. A cocoa farmer in Ghana, Emmanuel Kofi, can now buy crop insurance right from his mobile phone. No need for a physical office. The phone is the office.
And the really big innovation here is parametric insurance, right? That changes the whole claims process.
It's a complete game changer. Sure. With a traditional policy, an adjuster has to go out, see the damage, verify everything.
Yeah.
It's slow and expensive.
Right.
Parametric insurance, like the Kilimo Salama program in Kenya, just uses data. It links up to automated weather stations. If rainfall in your area drops below a certain pre-agreed level, the policy pays out automatically.
No adjuster, no argument.
No argument, just data. And that slashes administrative costs by about 80%, which makes premiums much lower. And crucially, it builds trust. The payout is based on objective data, not a judgment call.
Okay, let's bring all these ideas together now and look at what this means on the ground when disaster hits. The sources gave us this perfect side-by-side comparison from after Katrina, the tale of two gas stations.
Yes, this really shows how insurance doesn't just determine if you recover, but the entire speed and trajectory of that recovery.
So on one side, you have Gulf Coast Fuels. They had comprehensive coverage, including flood protection. They got a check for $1.2 million in 45 days.
Which meant they could immediately set up temporary facilities, keep paying their employees, and they rebuild bigger and better in just 8 months. They actually ended up doubling their staff. They became an engine for their community's recovery.
And right next door.
Right next door was Shoreline Gas.
Yeah.
They had minimal coverage, and critically, it excluded flood damage.
The classic mistake.
The classic mistake. They got only $85,000. It was nothing. They spent years trying to get government loans, lost their customer base, and just they never recovered.
So Gulf Coast Fuels is the multiplier effect in action, and Shoreline Gas is the economic stagnation that happens when it's not there.
Exactly. Insurance determined the fate of that entire neighborhood.
And let's end with this one last image, this visual from rural Kenya that connects financial security directly to your standard of living.
This is such a powerful story. As those farmers started getting access to these micro insurance products, they could finally take a real risk. They could plant more acres because they knew a single drought wouldn't wipe them out completely.
And that risk paid off. Their income went up. And what did they do with that new money?
They upgraded their homes. They were able to replace their vulnerable grass and thatch roofs with durable, permanent tin roofs.
And that's the perfect image, isn't it? That change from a fragile, temporary roof to a strong, permanent one. That's what insurance does.
It unleashes constrained potential. It allows people to make investments that lead to a permanent improvement in their quality of life, all because they finally have that financial backstop.
That's a fantastic place to wrap up our findings. So to summarize for you, insurance is really a form of infrastructure. It protects buildings, yes, but more importantly, it protects human capital and it ensures economic continuity.
And remember that dual role. It's a defensive shield that pays claims when things go wrong. But it's also a proactive catalyst funding long-term development with that $30 trillion portfolio.
What we've seen today is that a lack of insurance forces people into these really disruptive coping mechanisms, selling off assets, pulling kids out of school.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance is what allows individuals and societies to stop just planning for survival and start investing in growth.
So if we accept that the core economic benefit of insurance is really the preservation of human capital, our ability to learn and to work and to innovate, then that leaves us with a provocative thought. We know we'll rebuild a building eventually. But time a child spends out of school or a skill an unemployed worker loses, that's much harder to get back.
So as you go forward, consider this. What strategic investments should we prioritize today to protect the long-term wealth generated by people and not just the property they own?